Good evening, my name's Jason. I'm one of the Maybridge family here. This is a little rude to ask you this question, please forgive me. I feel I've got one or two good friends here who I have, haven't seen for a while, so I feel I can risk it with some of you, but I just want to ask you, how are you doing? Oh, that says something. You know, end of 2024, it's a bit of a battering, isn't it, the last few years? I wonder how you're doing. Have you paused for a moment to take stock, think about how you're doing in yourself, the people around you, your little tribe? What's going on with you? How are you? Have you had a chance to stop, to reflect? That's why one of the reasons that church is good, isn't it? You can pause and ask those sorts of questions. When you ask that kind of question, it's always, there's a bit of a kind of a scale of extremes in a group like this. There's going to be some of us here who are very well resourced. We have perhaps nice savings, perhaps you live somewhere nice, maybe you're looking forward to a lovely holiday that you feel you deserve, that kind of stuff. Then there's going to be others of us among who would certainly be represented here for whom food on the table is an issue. Maybe you have anxiety about what kind of work you're going to be doing next month. And even those of us who live in a situation where, you know, perhaps we've built a kind of a very nice walled garden around ourselves where we don't let undesirables in, even there, something happens where something creeps in. There's always this habit. There's always this thing with life. It always seems to find a way in, doesn't it? It's the ultimate hacker where it somehow invades your life with cancer or with loneliness. There might be someone here who is struggling with issues to do with just friendships. You're the sort of person on the outside, you look really together. Yeah, if you were to be honest with yourself in private with someone who you trust, you would say, do you know what, I feel I'm falling apart here because I didn't even see this coming, but some significant relationship has just fallen apart. So how are you doing? And I wonder if you'd agree with this theory that I've been thinking about. Obviously, I've been thinking about this a little lately. This theory that I've got that most of us spend the majority of our time rearranging the cushions. I mean, I'm fortunate to be married to someone who likes to have a million cushions in the house. Maybe there's other guys here who relate to this. You spend half the time taking them off the bed before you can actually find the bed. But I mean, the thing is, where we've got these cushions in life, isn't trying to reduce comfort or discomfort one of the things that we spend most of? I mean, there are some people who aren't like that, but very few. Most of us, it's about, we know how bad things can get, so we invest our time thinking, you know, if I can prepare now for when the time gets worse. And it might not be for you, it might be for your children or your grandchildren or those around you who you love. You think, you know, I'm going to save up for them. I'm going to create a situation where they will be safe. I think most of us devote most of our time, energy, effort, our thought life, our energies to trying to rearrange cushions. Now, it's funny because we come to a church on an evening like this, beautiful, very emotional, lovely, lovely things that have been prepared for us. What a treat to be here tonight. But it's interesting that the Christmas story, when you come to a church like this and you hear the Christmas story about baby Jesus, it's sort of, when you spend your whole life making cushion arrangements, you hear the Christmas story, it ends up becoming another cushion, right? So it's like nice baby Jesus in the stable. Maybe you've seen your grandchild in a nativity. Aren't they cute? The kid who looks like a donkey, even though he's dressed as an angel. I don't know. But there's some sort of weird situation where they're, you know, and it's all nice. It's cute. And we can put all these little things together. And you come along to somewhere like tonight and you sort of think, yeah, this is just going to be another chance. And, you know, you think, why shouldn't I go along to a church and hear that kind of stuff? Because let's face it, we need a little bit of spiritual sprinkling on our lives, right? Something to take the sadness away. And just for a few moments, I can be distracted, and it's another cushion in my life. And the idea that someone might say that there's a God out there, I don't even know if a God exists, but maybe if there's a God out there who's somehow benignly smiling at me, a sense of that radiance somewhere, you know, I can go home tonight and feel a little bit better about the world. Well, of course, this is not what the Christmas story is about. It isn't a cushion, another one for our sofa, another one that our wife can use in the million cushions at home. It's not one of those. The Christmas story is a true story. And by true story, I mean, thank you, Toby, with a capital T. Look how big that T is. It's massive. There we are in the corner, rearranging our cushions, trying to fit life around us that works well. And here's this story that has taken centuries to come here. You know, you've probably, some of you have been on a nice holiday where you've been around a cathedral that took 500 years to build. As you're walking around, you're thinking, wow, that's quite a building project. It puts my house extension into a bit of perspective. They had many lifetimes in building this thing. Well, the story of Jesus is like that. Over many centuries, millennia, in fact, this story was building up all these prophecies, these promises, these empty experiences, these broken hopes and dreams, but all the time building up, building up, building up. Very specific predictions. And finally, as we get to the end of the Old Testament, 400 years of silence where God just pauses the button and says, right, no more prophecy, about 400 years. And they're just thinking, what? There's all this promise. What's going on? And then, of course, we get Jesus being born in Nazareth. And again, it's the start of something really significant. But this is a true story with a capital T. It's not a little cushion. It's a dynamic story. This baby Jesus did not stay as a baby. Those of you here, we've got three new babies in the church, which is a lovely thing to be able to say. What a wonderful way to end the year. But those babies are not going to stay as babies. They are going to become terrible tantrum toddlers. And one day, they're going to become terrible teenagers. And they're going to cause you the kind of havoc you wouldn't even want to think about. But it's a dynamic story. Jesus grew. And as he grew, so the challenge grew. You see, if we were to allow the baby Jesus just to grow beyond cushion stage, if we were to give him just 3 decades and say to him, Jesus, we loved it when you were a little baby, we loved all that, but why have you come? Why? As he started to emerge, came out as the Messiah, very quiet up to that point, but then he sort of announced, I am the one that was being promised. Why did you come here? And in Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 45, he says, this is why I came. I did not come to be served, but to serve. I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And to give my life as a ransom for many. I came here not for people to respect me, but to do something for you. And I came here to do something for you and to give the life that you see here, he said, for you as a ransom for many. And of course, I personally did not grow up as a Christian. I wasn't around Christian things very much. I saw the occasional vicar come into a school assembly and we all just mocked them and it was all just ridiculous. Santa Claus for grown-ups, that's what I thought of it. But one day when I was about 17 years of age and someone who was a Christian in a band that I was in, it was a terrible band, but this guy took it very seriously. So I started to read a Bible and people started to talk to me about the actual life of Jesus, what he really did. And my goodness, when it says I came to give my life, what a life! I mean, this wasn't just an ordinary guy. If you could get God from beyond, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe you don't believe there's a God, but if there was, what would that God be like? And if they came into this world as a being, became flesh, born, you know, created down to the tiniest little speck in a woman's womb, and then growing, and then being born in the ordinary kind of way, right? And then living among us, and then as a man, moving around. Not one of these toxic males. Not one of these guys in crisis who feels they have to be horrible to people, but a true man. A guy who shows kindness, who just, someone who had a magnetic personality, you sort of thought, wow, this person's fantastic. But not just that, someone who had miraculous powers. As if God himself was walking among us, walking on water. That sounds a bit bizarre, did that really happen? Multiplying bread for thousands, taking people who'd been blind their entire life and placing his hand on them and then being able to see people who'd never walked, walking around. It was as if God himself was walking among us. What a life! And if we just even then get into what he said, words, things that Jesus said, wisdom of such quality, it reminds me of my mother-in-law's Dundee cakes. Dense, rich. I mean, you eat one of those, don't fall off the pier. You'll go straight to the bottom, I swear. In other words, don't go swimming after you've read Jesus' wisdom because you'll go straight to the bottom. It's so dense and rich. This wisdom that can change a culture. Jesus' words, just his words. If you just take that, that would be enough. But of course it isn't. And this is the life that he brought. What an incredible life. But you see, there's a really weird line in the New Testament. Actually, it's in a couple of places for those who know your Bibles. It's in Hebrews chapter 2 and chapter 5, where it describes Jesus and it says, he became perfect. It's a really weird line, because you sort of think, well, wasn't he perfect? Because he's God in the flesh, so isn't he perfect already? Well, yeah, he is, but it doesn't mean it in that way. Not like morally pure or holy. It doesn't mean in that way. He became perfect as a representative of one of us. He stepped into our world like the perfect God-man came into our world and stepped into the trials that you well know at the end of 2024. The anxieties you have for those around you who are sick. The broken heartache that comes with divorce. The bullying that comes from your children. You know, you are very tough, but your children, when they suffer, you feel it, right? He stepped into that and he became perfect in a way that meant that when he stood before his Father in heaven, he could say, I get it. I know why they rearrange their cushions. I know why they spend their whole time in fear, clinging to what they can get. I understand it. In that sense, he is the one person we could say, he's got our back, because he gets why. He's not some aloof teacher who turns up and just bosses the class around. He's someone who really knows what it's like to be with us. Fantastic. What a life. But you see, there's more than him just being simply sympathetic. He hasn't come to just be another cushion, you see. He's come to give us something much more, and not just sympathetic, but also he's come here to expose a deep sickness. There is a friend of mine, I'm not going to say who they are, but there's a friend of mine, a very dear close friend of mine, who is also a personal hero, and this Thursday he is going to get an MRI scan. Now, some of you will know exactly what that's about. He's a senior gentleman, and it is very clear that he might have something very seriously wrong inside him. Now, does he want to go for that MRI scan? Not really. But he knows that if he doesn't go through that experience, he won't know what's going on inside him. And if he does find out, he needs something radical to happen. Now, Jesus was a bit like an MRI scanner. People called him a physician. They said, you're like a doctor coming around and could see things. Jesus could see things in a person that other people could not see. And he came to us and he described our hearts and he described our situation, saying, listen, it's a complex thing, but all of us here are caught in something that's a little bit like a dungeon. But it's a weird form of dungeon. It's a weird form of slavery, because not only are we victims of the world around us, like how many of us have ever faced injustice? How many of us have felt grieved as we see people around the world at the moment whose lives have been destroyed? And for what? For selfish bullies, right? We feel that, and maybe you've been at the receiving end of that. But not only are we in a world that's horrible to the victims, we're also part to blame. We're vandals within that world. You know, it's quite true that we can see things going on that are evil and get really upset about it. But if it's not convenient to us, we turn a blind eye. Now, maybe you've not realised that about yourself, but certainly when I first came in touch with Jesus, and even this week, there are things in my own life where I think, wow, being around you, Jesus, is not that fun sometimes, because you're like an MRI scanner who's exposing my heart, the poisons that are in it. Now, if Jesus was just that, it would be a bit of a weird thing. Someone who understands us, someone who exposes things going on in our hearts and the world. If that was it, it would be a bit weird, because what are you going to do about it, Jesus? Well, of course, the quote is, I've not come to be served, but to serve, and to give my life as a ransom for many. You see, having exposed what was in our hearts, Jesus doesn't just leave it there. Next slide, please, Toby. He reveals his truth, but he also reveals his heart of love. Maybe you've never realized this about God. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of ideas around, right? But the Bible reveals something about our hearts. At the same time, it reveals something else about God that's quite extraordinary. Yes, there is a God, but he loves us to the point where he came to the world, and at the same time as showing us our problem, he did something about it. On one particularly grim Friday, Jesus submitted himself to a horrific death, giving up that precious life, that incredible life. What a life! Save it! Don't spoil that life. Don't give it away. But he gave it away. He endured the cross. And in so doing, did something extraordinary. That dungeon that thing that we were caught in, that world where we always felt, you know, this is the way it is. Just make the best of it you can. Get the best career you can. Get the best healthcare you can. Get the best friends around you. Don't mix with toxic people. Just do the best you can. Suddenly, Jesus says, no, no, there's something more. There's a different possibility. And on that grim Friday, as he died, it was like a ball of light coming into our universe from beyond. And the ball of light, as it approached us, it smashed into that cage and broke it and provided us with a choice which we have never had before. You know, when they took Jesus' body down from the cross and they put it into the tomb, his disciples were just like, this is it, it's over. There's nothing here now. And they all went home. Saturday passed, Sunday morning, and there was an earthquake. And Jesus rose from the dead, and he came out of the tomb. And as he pushed out of the tomb, this earthquake and this stone fell apart. And as he came out of the tomb as a resurrected, victorious king over death, it was as if the door on the dungeon, the thing, this world, this thing that we're stuck in, it was as if it swung open. I do children's parties, by the way. But it was as if something happened. There was a new movement. And here's Jesus here to us tonight. You know, I've got some dear friends in this room who I haven't seen for such a long time, and I love you very much. But I say to you, all that time I worked as a teacher, this is very personal, this is to a few people in the room, all the time I worked as a teacher, unable to say this stuff, I'm now in a church where I'm not bound by those rules, and therefore I'm going to say something very personal to you. Since I became a Christian at the age of 18, I have known this new path, which was a choice between a rearranging cushions and staying with the status quo and doing the best I could in this world, or something beyond. And Jesus, tonight in 2024, says to you, before the new year comes, have you ever thought that there is someone from heaven who's come to you and says, come and have better, come and receive me, the cushions aren't enough. Our last song was, You Will Be Found. Well, you have been found, but will you be found?